Yo, we back in Everland. Let's get right into it. Let's just get right into it. I am really stoked about the fact that One in a Million by Aaliyah is finally out on streaming platforms, because it just really made me uncomfortable that the only album that was accessible was Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. So really happy to see One in a Million out on digital streaming platforms. I would love for it to be reissued on vinyl or something, because that would be a lovely thing to be able to hear that album on vinyl. I don't ever listen to Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. I stopped listening to it since I stopped listening to R. Kelly music. So, well, speaking of R. Kelly, it's a lot of testimonies that I can't even, I mean, just looking at the headlines and then reading some of the facts, it's like, ugh, okay, yikes. But yeah, I stopped listening to his stuff really since I was like, ever since that tape came out the first go around, and I was 16 and TP2.com was out, and I had that physical copy of the album. No, I listened to him in college again, but yeah, then I stopped. It's that nigga got hella hits, but it hasn't been hard for me to stop listening to his shit. It has not been hard at all. So yeah, so I had to. But yeah, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, I did listen to a lot. So I listened to all of Aaliyah's albums. So I would love for her last album, Aaliyah, to come out as well, 'cause that ended up being my favorite album from her. 'Cause it was One in a Million for, I mean, ever since One in a Million came out, that definitely was my favorite. But when she came out with We Need a Resolution, I was like, oh man, she mad. She ready to really talk some shit. And then in college, I listened to it, and the older I got, the more I was like, yeah, Aaliyah was definitely my favorite. And so I cannot wait for that album to be issued as well. But I'm very pleased with getting One in a Million. That album is, it just sounds so great. It aged very well, and Timbaland and Missy, definitely, they produced a sound that was much more fitting to who she portrayed herself, and it sounded like when she was more herself when she teamed up with them. Speaking of Timbaland Magoo's album's out too, so yeah, Magoo, he Magoo was I fucked with him. I thought he was dope. But anyways, shout out to Aaliyah's family. Her uncle said that he apologized for it taking so long. It took him so long to grieve, but especially details finally coming out and stuff, and ooh, bless her heart. She went through a lot. My goodness, did she go through a lot. So I'm bringing back some old favorites of mine rather. But instead of making it like a pause break type situation, I'm just gonna make it fluid. So I am bringing back The Brick and the Swish. So the big old brick, the big kadunky, kerplunky rather, goes to Rachel Nichols. So it looked like, the Root made a great point in that they said, the writer said that it felt like when Maria Taylor bounced to the Olympics, it felt like, and then Rachel Nichols was able to keep her jobs, as the NBA host and like NBA, for NBA, not just NBA host for Inside NBA, but well, not Inside the NBA, but the NBA pregame show they did for ESPN and ABC. She was the host for that. Of course, until Maria Taylor took over last summer. And then she kept her job with The Jump, which has been going on for 5 years. I didn't even know it's been going on for that long. Actually, yeah, I have. Yeah, 20, yeah, that's the right amount of time. Yeah. So It felt like, as the Root reporter wrote, it felt like Rachel Nichols silently won the war between the two, between she, or battle between she and Maria Taylor. But ESPN pulled the plug on her NBA duties, as well as canceling NBA The Jump, which I found interesting, because that, that show didn't look like it was suffering in ratings, but ESPN, I guess, I mean, that was, there's more, I feel like there's just more behind that story, and is ain't no telling what else happened since then, ain't no telling what Rachel Nichols has said, but she bowed out gracefully, I guess, but definitely a big brick. She, yeah. She never should have made it about her. Oh, this is my thing. And she never, I mean, that whole, no matter how you heard the, no matter the context of that leak audio, it just didn't look or sound good for her. And it definitely, oh, it just, anytime you listen to it, it's, the end result was the same. It sounded like she was saying that Maria Taylor was an affirmative action hire. And I just remember last year seeing the switch and not thinking anything of it, because I do not like Rachel Nichols. I just don't like her. And this is from a journalist standpoint. This is from my standpoint of how I know it would be if I were to work with someone like her, had I, you know, stuck with just, you know, regular, stuck with wanting to do sports reporting. I always just had an issue with her journalistically. And then seeing her background and how she has two major connections to Hollywood as well as to ABC, which owns ESPN because of Diane Sawyer, aka, isn't she like known for Queen of ABC? Like, people know her. People are familiar with Diane Sawyer. So, so yeah. So Rachel Nichols herself did not get there from merit. You can't tell me that she did. And then on top of that, she graduated from Northwestern, which is, y'all know, if y'all ever paid attention to me, I always talk shit about Northwestern because the real Western, West Kentucky, had a better journalism program. I'm going to keep saying it. But anyway, so brickety brick to Rachel Nichols, for real. She literally ain't going to be anywhere near hoops anytime soon. God bless you, little lady. Bless your little heart. But really bless, the switch goes to Anfernee Hardaway, because we should have known something then, like a couple of months ago, when he announced that he was staying with the Memphis Tigers after turning down a job offer from his first team, the team that traded for him so he can get technically drafted by them, Orlando Magic. He really could have gone back to where it all started for him professionally, but he was like, no, nah, I'm sticking to where it really started for me when I was at Memphis State. It was called Memphis State at the time. So seeing him be loyal to, you know, like, not loyal, but seeing him stick with his alma mater like that and want to build a program and a dying, I mean, ain't nobody watching NCAA really like that. I mean, people, unless you racist, it's like, the NCAA got the same treatment pretty much, PR-wise, as the NFL. You know, people, I got tired of seeing these young black men get exploited and not get any money. But now that bill passed where they can start getting compensated for their likeness and all that, that's going to probably change the game for them, because... So, Penny got Larry Brown, who's 80. I wonder if he's ever been married. I mean, I guess he has been married. He might have. I wonder, like, what. Like, I wonder if he's ever, like, had a stable marriage and stable, like, relationship with his kids. If he had, like, I really don't know much about Larry Brown's personal life, because I see him. I mean, he is the man who has coached everywhere, like a straight-up nomad when it comes. Like, the last place he was at is SMU. You know, like, this man will take the job. He loves basketball. He is 80, and he probably still wakes up in the morning and runs suicides in his driveway, like straight up Jim Carrey and Cable Guy style. Like, this dude still straps up in high top chucks and probably shoots set shots, you know, every Sunday afternoon type shit. You know what I'm saying? Larry Brown, he accepted a job offer as Penny Hardaway's assistant coach. And then Penny also hired Rasheed Wallace. I'm like, what? Rasheed Wallace, man, that dude, he is one of my all-time favorite players, man. I'm talking about all-time favorite. I've been a fan of his since UNC, and I just love how passionate and ferocious he is when it comes to playing, because he's not like, well, you could, because you, I never read a single article about him beating up anybody or, you know, no domestic violence, none of that shit. So I just love the, I love the switch around. He, you know, Tim Duncan, they're pretty similar actually. But yeah, so we got Sheed and Larry Brown back in Penny, and then he got Jalen Duren. And then, just a couple of days ago, Imani Bates. The last issue I have of Slam is with him on the cover. And I read his story, and I honestly didn't think he was, I thought he was going to go to G League route, a la Jalen Green. And I read about how his dad created an academy, Ypsilanti. New York, or Ypsilanti, Michigan, whatever, words. But yeah, it's Ypsilanti Academy. His dad created that whole academy. And Imani Bates, of course, was a star on the team. And he was a baller. And I mean, I just read about, same way I read about Jason Tatum, who had a diary with Slam when I was subscribing at this time. Then the Ball family, like Slam Magazine, that's why they gonna always stay alive, man. That's why they're always gonna stay afloat, because they are always first in breaking news about for real hoopers. And they scoop it with as a magazine. They produce like 8 issues a year. And ever since I've been 13, I've been following, you know, so that's when I subscribed to them when I was 15? But I got into them when I was like 9 or 10. And just, they've always been number one and breaking news who's going to be the shit. Except for that one time when they said Ray Allen was going to fade into obscurity. Boy, oh boy, was that a bad. And they were like, we started playing about. Yeah, that was a bad idea. That was the only time I've ever seen them fuck up on any type of prediction. But yeah, so you got Imani Bates. And these are top two prospects. Like, they're like 1-2 punch. That's like, you know what? I could go back in time and be like, that's like gifts, dust, and shuts. But, you know, I mean, this is like when DeJuan Wagner and Derrick Rose went to Memphis, you know, when John Calipari was the coach. And I guess Penny Hardaway is like, I'm recruiting just like John Calipari, but I'm going to be clean about it. Because, yeah, Penny doing his thing, so he definitely gets the swish. Especially with War Williams, he's gone now. He retired this year, and then you got Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. He's going to be retiring after this season. So it's going to be cool to see what Penny trying to do, baby. I'm definitely watching the NCAA again. Because Penny's been there for, what, like 2-3 seasons now? And that still didn't get me into watching the NCAA. I haven't filled out a bracket since 2016. I just don't do it anymore. But now I will be. Oh, yeah. Dale Curry and Sonya Curry, they're divorcing. Dale Curry is divorcing Sonya because they've been together for 30 years. And so, long story short, according to Sonya, it was an open secret that Dale Curry was out here getting them hoes. He's a basketball player. Basketball player get hoes because they the big hoes. So, yeah, so he been hoeing ever since they've been married, and she actually got fed up, and so she started dating I think he used to play for the New England Patriots, so she started fucking with a football player. Because football players aren't as, they're not as hoish as basketball players, I guess. I don't know. But, so I guess she started fucking with this dude, and she got tired of the marriage, so they separated. And I guess Dale Curry's in his feelings because they're like for real official now. And so he's like, well, fuck this. Let's make this official then. And you know how niggas be. As soon as the woman been, she been cheating on a woman for 30 years. And then when she finally got fed up and she meets someone that tends to her needs, he's like, well, fuck this. If that's how the story went, I don't give a fuck. That's just what was reported. All that to say, I really think they just, you know, the Ball family, man, they put him under a lot of pressure, you know, so. I'm just kidding. They're like, move over, Curries. We got these niggas now. So, yeah. Best of luck to him. To him, Bo. Russell Westbrook, I totally forgot to, in the last episode, I forgot to mention that he's going to the Lakers. But he's going to the Lakers. That's going to be interesting as fuck. So, you got Melo and Russ. I really wonder how that's going to go. It's going to be a lot of niggas taking the ball from each other. Nah, Bron's a passer. Russ is a passer. Carmelo's going to be Carmelo. Oh, yeah, Joel Embiid got the money, got that contract extension. Way, damn near $200 million for 4 years. And then Ben Simmons, we still don't know about him. He might stay with them. I don't know. I will say that I watched the Untold Malice at the Palace documentary. It was fucking awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I'm glad the players got to finally tell their story because I've heard it only through podcasts. It's good to have it like in camera. On camera, you get to see the players and the angst they went through. And then, you know, just, and also Reggie Miller too. They did a great job. So shout out to Netflix for that, because that definitely was, it was pretty much a Netflix version of 30 for 30. It was good. That one fan, what a bitch. He's like, yeah, man, Jermaine O'Neal sucker punched me. That was a bitch ass move. And the fact that the Pistons treated a loyal fan how they did. It's like, dude, they've been wanting to get rid of you and your... as you and your fake turtle from Entourage. Nigga did look like Turtle from Entourage. Yeah, dude was the one who came up to, he was the one that came up to Ron Artest trying to, like, really coming up to him to come to blows with him. Ron Artest was like, nigga, you don't get the fuck. So that prosecutor in Detroit, he was like, yo, nah, we coming for the fans, cause they really created this whole ruckus. So that was good. I remember when I was at FIU, because I was covering football, and I traveled with the team everywhere they went, and so I went, it was in Miami, Florida International, and I remember when I came back from the hotel, all I saw was the ESPN highlights, and the players are not, they were totally telling the truth. SportsCenter only showed Ron Artest going into this, like, they showed the first fight with Ben Wallace, then they cut to Ron Artest going to fight the fans in the stands, and that whole, like, oh, thugs, oh, these, I remember that shit, and I remember being really disappointed, because I was like, because all I saw was, I saw it from the angle, too, so I'm sitting here thinking, why are they fighting fans? I've never seen this. This is awful, because I don't even like it when, like, I don't even like when hockey players have their fights. I don't like when baseball players have, you know, when they have the dugout brawls. I don't like any of that shit. So, because, I mean, why do I want to see a bunch of grown niggas fighting each other? Anyway, so yeah, that angle that I saw from Malice at the Palace, it was very, very biased. So, once I started to really read behind the scenes, I was like, oh, okay, there was more to the story. Because Jermaine O'Neal, I've never seen him. Like, yeah, you know, he was part of the Jailblazers, but The jail people just talk shit. Like, and Reggie Miller says, like, this is nothing but shit talk. Like, shit talking is totally normal. But this shit, nah, that shit was wild. And then, and it was very, I felt like it was very important that they really did this because of, and when they released it, because of what we saw, that fucked up pattern with these fans who was spitting on motherfuckers and coming for Ja Morant's parents, saying, you gonna dance for me, boy, shit like that. These niggas wilding. So, yeah, I'm glad that fans getting accountability like a motherfucker. Cause fuck these niggas. Just because you paying for a ticket don't mean you got a ticket to treat a motherfucker any kind of way. Get the fuck out of here with that goofy ass shit. Alright. Oh, yeah. And lastly, before I take a little pause, shout out to the Atlanta Falcons for being the first NFL team with 100% vaccine rate. Can't be mad at it. Alright, let's go to a little Tommy timeout. Well, before I take a... It's going to be the first timeout. First timeout. Alright, so this is the heavier portion of the news that I will comment on, starting with the Taliban regaining power in Afghanistan after 20 years of the U.S. troops being there, and Biden pulled the troops out some months ago. I think it's fucked up for sure. I mean, I really believe it's fucked up, and I believe that the ones who are seeking asylum, you know, I think as Americans, it's only right for us to open our doors to immigrants fleeing a terrible situation in their homeland and seeking asylum elsewhere. You know, I definitely am in favor of that. But the one thing I really want to mention is how during Trump administration, during his presidency, quote-unquote presidency, a former quote-unquote president, George W. Bush, was starting to look good in hindsight to some people, and they're saying, man, we must be in really bad times if George W. Bush is looking like a good person. He still isn't, guys. He started all this dumbass shit. He was the original Trump. People act like this nigga was not the original Trump. This guy was a big fucking moron. So, and he still is. Just because this nigga painting, by the way, he's painting by numbers. It's just a number for him, probably. Like, get the fuck out of here. This nigga's been... I'm just saying, he's really no different from Trump. Trump is just a bigger asshole. But they're the same niggas. And people try to figure out, oh, whose fault is this? Trump? Whose fault is this? Biden? Whose fault is this? Obama? No, it's still W, that goofy nigga. It's still his fault. This whole thing. That's all I'll say. So, it's got about to get grim. So, there's been two really, really... It's been a lot of gruesome murders recently. The two that has been mentioned... Well, the three, really. A black woman, a young black woman who was killed in Lithonia. She was found and she was recognized because of her tattoos. Then there was a white woman who was murdered gruesomely, like legit mutilated, along with her dog in Piedmont Park. And then that's when it came to light that Piedmont Park it's 187 acres and there's only 9 cameras, and none of the 9 cameras picked up who killed this woman and her dog. But they did release video of a jogger who was a possible witness, and they're saying he's cooperating. It's a really fucked up murder. I mean, really, really fucked up. Definitely, it's possible that it was a hate crime, but possible. Because the woman recently, she was discovered by her wife, and that's the most fucked up part is, the victim left her wife at her where her wife bartends, and she said, "I'm gonna go walk the dog." And I guess the wife got concerned and was trying to figure out how where she is, and she saw from when you can share your location with people, so she went to her location and she saw that that's where she discovered her and the dog. It's real fucked up. So that got a lot of us shook, us as in women. Then we got even more shook after another young lady who was kidnapped in front of her house and an hour later was shot to death. And then her body was found on Lakewood Avenue. She was a bartender at Reverie, and then I think she also worked at church sometimes. And then she used to be a bartender and mother, so it was real fucked up. Really, really, really fucked up. And then they released the 911 call, and her boyfriend, who's a rapper, a local rapper here, he apparently saw the whole thing from the window. And that, like, that, of course, Black Twitter always flittering men. So everybody became their own little sleuths and was assuming that he, I don't know what they were assuming. So they, yeah, I don't know. I guess they just assumed that, I don't even want to say it. It's just fucked up because people are coming for him too. They're saying, well, because the media, of course, did what they did. They showed a photo of him holding two guns. So people are like, well, you had two guns. Why you didn't use it? Why you just going to let your girlfriend get kidnapped and murdered? Like, not even trying to figure out what he could have possibly be going through. And I have friends who knew the young lady and know the rapper, so a lot of them saying, the people who actually know the ones in the situation, they're saying, especially the rapper, they were saying well, people knew what was really going on. They know that he, I don't know, I don't even put his business out, but there's is a legal reason why he couldn't use his gun. So all I'm saying is the whole thing is fucked up and tragic. I don't think it's right for us to come to these, us as Black people, I don't think it's right for us to say this type of shit, especially on a big platform as Twitter. Just, you know, and how, and again, we're relying on the media, like local media that goes through all kinds of footage and edit just so it can be presented in this little pocket of information. So that's what my thing is. As I've always waited, I like to wait until the facts really come out. I just like that. So I'm not gonna say anything else other than this shit's fucked up, and I really am sorry for the young lady but all the women that I just mentioned who were victims. I'm sorry for all of that shit. That shit is so fucked up, and and it's really fucked up to turn, you know. It's like, where was the man? Where was he? Why he didn't? How you just gonna sit there and watch? I mean, I don't know what I would have done in that situation. Shock is real, and shock paralyzes people, and it causes trauma. So, yeah, it's fucked up. So my heart goes out to everybody who has been affected and impacted by all these. I mean, there's been great tributes to the Piedmont Park has a visual out there, and then they did a mural across the street from Astoria for the young lady who was kidnapped and murdered. They gave her a beautiful mural and the visual as well. So yeah, my heart goes out to them. I guess before I go to the timeout, I want to also address the whole Lizzo situation and how people just be coming for her for no fucking reason. It just be so, like, anything she's ever done, it's like, fuck that fat ugly bitch. And it's like, you looked at her, she's not ugly. She's beautiful. What is going on? And what is wrong with a fat woman being okay in her own skin? And what's wrong with that? It's fine. Like, let's all relax. And let her live and let her be happy in her own truth. Like, it's so wild to me. Like, they'd be like, fuck that bitch. And someone made a really great point. Even before Saweetie got the meal with McDonald's, when she went viral, what was it? She did Instagram Live, and when she did that meal with the Big Mac and whatever the fuck she did, it was just like a mess of McDonald's yuckiness, and she had a mound of it and she ate it. And so I made a great point. It's like, man, if that would have been Lizzo, people would have gone crazy. They would have been saying all kinds of shit. So Saweetie got a meal out of that shit. But if it was Lizzo, it definitely would have been backlash, because she's getting backlash just for being her. She's like, look, I mean, she returned to Twitter and everything, and then people just reminded her immediately why she left for over a year. So she's like, look, if you don't like the song Rumors, that's totally fine, but I don't need you talking shit about me. And then Cardi B's in the video. So Cardi B, shout out to her. I thought that was cool that she stood up for her and got her back. But honestly, as Jezebel, I never read the article, any articles from Jezebel. It's called fucking Jezebel. And when I was looking for different, I like to look at different news outlets and see how they report certain things, because that's how I feel. And I'll come up with my own conclusion, how I take in the information. And so when I was looking, I saw a headline that caught my eye. It says, "The internet does not deserve Lizzo's tears." And that was the most accurate headline, and I was so shocked to see it was Jezebel. But hey, shout out to Jezebel for doing an article that I actually enjoyed this go around. But yeah, the internet does not deserve anyone's tears, really. It always makes me uncomfortable when I see people on Instagram, like celebrities on Instagram Live, you know, and they're crying. Like, I understand it being an interview and you're crying and it's candid and certain things, but you're on your own Instagram Live on your own time and you're recording yourself cry. I don't know. It's just, I'm not saying it's weird. I'm just saying that we don't really need to, you know, it's not necessary for us to see that, you know? I mean, if you're recording yourself, I don't know. Whatever. Hey, do what you do. But yeah, seeing Lizzo cry, it happens. You can be confident and still be fragile. Like, we got to stop this mentality that black women are these strong, tour de force motherfuckers who don't need protection because they're not delicate. And we're all fucking fragile and delicate. Just treat us as such. And I mean, why can't we applaud a woman just being happy in her own skin? There's so many magazines out there that's telling us to not do such, and it's okay. If fat people can be healthy too, people need to understand that as well. Anyway, lastly, the whole Tony Hawk versus Lil Nas X thing. I'm gonna just say something. It's just Lil Nas X had a good point about how it's like, well, seeing that people are excited about Tony Hawk having his own blood, and he's like some skateboards, I think, that Tony Hawk's doing, and it's like he's like, you guys gonna have access to my real DNA? And it's like, okay, Tony. But yeah, Lil Nas X is like, well, I guess when I had blood in my shoes, I guess the problem was not with the blood, it was something else. And yeah, I mean, of course, everybody's gonna always just like people are always gonna have something to say about, it's just in general, if you're a person that is the opposite of the quote unquote, not if you're the opposite of what society expects you to be, there's gonna always be room for judgment. Lil Nas X has a great point. You know, it was definitely homophobia involved, but it was also probably the Satanism too that people thought it was involved with. But people weren't understanding that he was mocking the whole idea that homosexual, or not even just homosexual, anyone in the queer community, anybody in the queer community, LGBTQIA. A lot of, you know, them Westboro motherfuckers think they're heathens and they're all going to hell. So that's his take on that shit. People need to understand what art is. So yeah, you know, it went over their heads. And, you know, they were really thinking this is some demonic shit. Still, Tony Hawk, it is the fact that his is coming off as like, oh, it's Tony Hawk, it's fine. He's the cool skateboarder. It's like, that's still weird that he's putting his own blood and shit too. So, and that could be looked at as ritualistic as fuck as well. So, Lil Nas X has a good point, but I really want him to enjoy his youth. Just enjoy your youth, bro. You don't have to prove points all the time, but that's what the 20s is about. I gotta prove a point. I just want him to really enjoy his, I don't want to say fame is not joyous at all, but I want him to, like I said, just enjoy his youth and not feel like he has to put, I mean, it's a big burden that he has on his shoulders, you know, being an openly gay rapper. Because I love Maconan. I mean, when he came out, I just haven't seen him in anything. And Lil Nas X, he figured out a way to get what he can out of. I mean, he's a different artist, man. He really is. So I ain't mad at it. So is Lizzo. But yes, I am going to go on a time out. Okay, so before I get into this segment, which is essentially the basis of the name for the show, for the episode, I want to express how I feel like I've made it very clear when I do these critiques on how life is, really. It's always a not all men type situation, because I always will understand both sides, you know, like, I understand men's gripe, I understand women's gripes, you know, like, I understand it both, because we all on some fuck shit, we really are, like, and the whole battle of the sexes thing, I'm like, you gotta get over that shit, because we all ain't shit when it comes down to not knowing what the fuck to do when it comes to our hearts, you know what I'm saying? So, I come from a place where I've had positive relationship with a lot of the male species. I say male species because, you know, ever since I was a girl, from being a young girl to a woman, you know, I've always had guy friends. And that's because I just have been a tomboy my whole life. Because I just was a boisterous ass girl, and you know, I had a positive relationship with my brother, and then my sister started dating her husband, you know, I was 5, so he was also a big bro. He's also a big brother to me. And then my dad, have a good relationship with him. And then, you know, when my cousin was out of jail, had a good relationship with him. I was like, damn, nigga, why you gonna be in and out of jail, man? You're crazy. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, it's like, you have a collect call from, I'm like, dang, again? Anyway, let me not. But even him, too, you know? Like, all that to say, like, all the, like, my cousin Tyrone, who lives here, who I recently, you know, saw at my show, and then he came to my birthday barbecue, and then had a cousin, rest in peace, Quint, my Uncle Junior, rest in peace, you know, my nephew, I have a really good relationship with both men, you know, both the women in my life and the men in my life, but, you know, There's one thing we tired of, and we're tired of coming across motherfuckers who like to flaunt their, who really like to flaunt their masculinity. And they be like, look, man, this bravado shit, you can say that for the fucking birds because we ain't interested. Fly away, nigga. So, what I'm saying is this whole, like, hey, y'all women be, like, after the recent deaths of the women in Atlanta, there's been a lot of reaching out, you know, a lot of guys reaching out to women, yo, get a pistol, don't be, you know, don't walk anywhere by yourself, be safe out there, protect yourself, be safe out there. But they the same niggas who, if it's not them, it's, well, it'll be, and you know, and a lot of times the dudes who saying that shit, it'd be the same motherfuckers who get mad because a woman don't say hi back. Well, fuck you too then. Or they got a homie who's like that. Most importantly, it's mainly they have a homie who's like that. They don't be like, yo, chill. And I'm just saying, shout out to the men in my life that I'm blessed with who I don't have men like that in my life where I feel like this segment will touch a nerve. Because, you know, I am safe because, I mean, I can feel that I'm being prayed for whenever I do things. I walk everywhere solo, and I've been a victim of, I mean, I was robbed at gunpoint by two young kids, you know, when I was, it was like 8 years ago, and it was when I was really, really vulnerable, and I had no one tell me, yo, why, no one questioned me, I had nobody tell me anything of the sort of where I was blamed. I was never victim shamed by that or blamed. But what happened after that, and that's, and it's the reason why to this day both my female friends and male friends and my relatives, they've all been like, yo, we really don't want that to happen to you ever again or anything worse. So please, like, they, you know, they like, yo, please take care of yourself. Like, please, if you are gonna be alone in the daytime, stay strapped. Have some sort of weapon. But please don't go anywhere alone at night. Like, you know, like, it's that. So I really wanna give a shout out to you all for being that way, to all of us who, you know, like, for women who are blessed to have people like that who praise them for their safety, that's awesome. And then there's some who are not as lucky, and it's fucked up. But it's also fucked up for the expectation of us to, oh, well, shit, you gotta protect yourself out there, man, because I know some niggas who crazy. Well, if you know they crazy, put them in their place, nigga. What the fuck? So, I want to read this. This is a really great thread that I saw on Instagram that someone, of course, Instagram is pretty much a place where you screenshot tweets and screen grab TikToks. Anyways, so this guy, Prime Discussion is his at on Twitter. Can't keep telling women to be hypervigilant special op agents just to stay safe in their everyday lives without addressing the source of the threat. Violence against women is a socialized behavior. It falls flat to keep giving these tips as if women haven't been making it clear forever that they don't feel safe. They know to be vigilant and aware. One of the best forms of education and communication to help illustrate how attitudes and beliefs enable extreme violence are pyramids, really effective at explaining a number of progressive layered complex social behaviors, sexual violence being one of them. So it's this pyramid of sexual violence that I will read out. So at the bottom is attitudes and beliefs. At the bottom is racism, colonialism, colonialism, sexism, homophobia, ableism. So the bottom, boys will be, that's the bottom being the basis, and it goes up and what it leads to. Boys Would Be Boys, Locker Room Banter, Rape Jokes. And then Victim Blaming, Slut Shaming, Bragging, Straight Gender Rules, Body Shame, Objectification. So that's on the bottom. And then it goes to the Normalization of Violence. Non-consensual exposure, catcalling, non-consensual photo sharing, revenge porn, following, leering. Removal of autonomy, as in... Removal of autonomy is aka violating, when you start violating us. Groping, non-consensual touch, sexual coercion, violations, which is what I just said, stalking, dosing, as in Spanish fly and shit like that. And what's the other one? It's real bad. Roofies, yeah, getting roofied. Physical expressions of violence. So these, there's three tiers. The bottom tier of that being sexual abuse, covert condom removal, as in removing condom mid-sex without her knowing, exploitation, sexual assault, and then safe word violations. And then up top, femicide, as in the killing of a woman, homicide. Oh yeah, okay, murder, gang rape, war rape, and then of course the top being genocide. So that's the pyramid of sexual violence, and that shit's real, and it is from, who did this? Let's see. Some university did this, the logo got cut off, So the guy, Prime Discussion, goes back. He goes, every person who holds and enables the beliefs and behaviors at the bottom of the pyramid isn't going to commit the acts toward the top of the pyramid. But the casual dismissal of and engaging in the bottom is always going to be a contributor to what enables the top. So, yeah, it always starts somewhere and then it gets big. Yeah, it's just everything. Anything that's, you know, starts off as... oh, okay, well, this is nothing, and then it gets big. Just like the guy who was arrested for the Reverie Bartender's murder. He had a record of child molestation, and he tried to rape a 5-year-old, and then he was recently dismissed because, I mean, like, if he had stayed in jail for the shit that he was already convicted of, you know, this wouldn't happen. It's like, that's, you know, that's how it leads to certain things. That's just an example. I mean, there's millions of examples. I mean, just look at mass shooters. It's always something that was overlooked that could have not been to have prevented a lot of shit. So... then there's those extremes may be statistical outliers from an academic technical standpoint, but clearly the occurrences are prevalent enough to be a real danger. And we, y'all be safe out there, our way out of engaging what socializes the violent threat. So, another example is that I could use is boys getting excused immediately for, like, just ever since playground era. Oh, this dude pulled my ponytail. Oh dear, that just means he likes you. Don't think anything else of it. And then you and then turn around and be like, well, if he hits you, why you stay with him? Well, I don't know. I was told ever since I was a young girl that means that they love me when they hit me. They so mad to see me with someone else that they hit me. And, you know, like, and that's a lot of, when you're conditioned at a young age to excuse a boy hurting you and it's your own mom. Yeah. A lot of the times that's gonna fuck up a lot of people. And then that's usually the case when it goes down to the core. So that is another example. And I mean, it's like a lot of us really don't know what love is, because, and that's why we end up with a lot of us end up with toxic men, because we think that them hurting us on a regular basis is their way of showing their love and affection to us. And then when we see someone who shows us love and affection, we get really confused and think it's not real. It is too good to be true. So, yeah, it's a cycle that fucks up. It's a cycle as well as a domino effect, you know? I mean, and it can be stopped from the beginning. But, and it's proof. I mean, you look at the ones who, like the men who know how to treat women, it's because they were taught at a young age how to. And, you know, and it's very important to be taught that. Especially, I don't know. I think it's really important that it starts. I mean, I just feel like when you see some shit in the beginning, don't overlook that shit, because it becomes a big thing. It reminds me of the punk band who started out as Minor Threat, and then when they got older, because they were teens as Minor Threat, and then when they got older, they became Fugazi. And that's life. It's like you start out as a Minor Threat, and it becomes this big ass fucked up thing. So, yeah. How about we just, and it's not, and this is me too. I mean, hell, there are women who have male friends who let shit slide as well. Like, we're all guilty. That's my whole point. We need to, and then, you know, there's situations where, I mean, there's situations where there's lesbian relationships where the woman is abusive as fuck too. So, it's all fucked up. It's just, we gotta stop people in the beginning, man. That's just the bottom line. How they treat us and how they treat other people. It's just, that is the bottom line. But I think it is very important that we, if we are going to take a risk and put ourselves in a possible dangerous situation, it is very important that we know how to get out of it. But if we just walking from A, point A to B, and it's broad and it's like sunny and safe, then why is that cloud hanging over our head just from us wanting to be independent? You know, why can't we just go for a jog without having to feel like we need to have a knife tucked in our sports bra? Like, at the end of the day, we just want to live. But yeah, there are certain situations where we do need to be more aware and alert, of course. But we shouldn't have to feel on guard all the fucking time when we set foot outside our house. So let's just be better. And I guess it's like the onus. That's what they say. Like, I saw some guys say the onus is on us. I'm like, y'all better do it. And that is definitely the title of the pod, man. Oh, yeah. Since I'm on the subject, the whole notion of having or keeping a man as a sign of success, that is so silly to me. I just want to throw that out there. Or just in general, like, relationships. And it's like, a lot of the time people say relationship, but y'all really in a relation canoe, okay? It's not sturdy. Y'all bound to tip over. So, take care of yourself so you don't have to waste anyone else's time. When you want to be in a relationship or a relation yacht, let's aim big. All right, I am going to go into overtime now. Oh man, so because I've been taking precaution on performing recently because of the recent spike of COVID cases, I did my first show in 2 weeks, because the last time I recorded, I was about to host this. I hosted this show at a parlor on Peter Street. Very fun time. I had a ball. I definitely did. And then I took a break because, like, I ended up canceling the the next two shows that I had following that day. I had back-to-back shows on Friday and Saturday, and I was like, nah, I'm just gonna take a break, ski for a minute. So I did my first show last night, and it was cool. It was definitely cool. But in the process, because I haven't been performing, I've been watching a lot of TV, and I watch a lot of movies. I saw the Jason Momoa one with the on Netflix, Sweet Girl. And then I saw Birds of Prey. I fuck with Harley Quinn, man. I like that character. I like Margot Robbie. She was so great. And I, Tanya, as Tanya Harding. So I fuck with her. And Birds of Prey was dope. And I recently read that Misha Barton, who holy shit, that's that white bitch from the OC. Misha Green, that's my bad, oops. But yeah, Misha Green, who did Lovecraft Country. She is going to do another series on HBO Max, and it's also going to star Journey Smollett. And it's going to be her character from Birds of Prey when she was Black Canary. So she's going to have a spinoff series. I will be looking forward to that. But yeah, Birds of Prey was dope. I fucked with it. I love seeing Rosie Perez, honestly. I'm glad she's still getting roles. She's funny as fuck. I really loved her in, I feel like my favorite character, my favorite role that she did was, her character in, White Man Can't Jump. Granted, her and Woody Harrelson, I was just like, but when she left him, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But I just loved her character, how smart she was, and then the Jeopardy shit. So, yeah. It was good to see her in this movie. And then I watched Eve's Bayou. Man, I haven't seen that. I saw that in theaters. And then, speaking of Journey, Smollett, let's keep it going, right? But yeah, I always liked Journey because of, she was Michelle's best friend on, whatever that showed up. I never liked, but I still watched. What was that shit? Full House, yes. And then she had that show with her brothers on her own. That was cute. So yeah, East Bayou was great. Megan Good, she apparently is, Megan Good, she's, I didn't know she was religious like that. So, I loved her in that. I loved her in East Bayou, but I wonder if that role was like, because she hasn't done a role like that since, really. Every role I've seen her in, she's just very, I don't know, she's like very preacher's wife. And come to find out, she's literally that. So yeah. I read why she doesn't do a lot of, like, there's a lot of films she doesn't, a lot of roles she doesn't take because she feels like it's, she doesn't take any roles that would disappoint God. That was a quote that I read. I'm like, all right, because I was wondering. I was like, yeah, why don't I mean, you just haven't seen her in any movies. Like, I mean, I think she was in the one with Michael Ealy where he's like obsessed. I don't know, but I really love that movie. It was well done. Samuel Jackson was a straight up hoe. So, and then Lisa Nicole Carson, she always plays, yeah. She's great too. I wonder. I hope she's doing well. I hope she's recovered and whatnot. But yeah, East Bayou was great. And then I binged all the first season and I'm all caught up with the second. Ted Lasso is an amazing show. And I saw that it broke a record of having 20 Emmy nominations. Fuck yes. Jason Sudeikis, man. I mean, I think I talked about it from the previous episode because I watched Horrible Bosses. I love that movie. I don't know why. But I do know why. It's so funny. That, the Jamie Foxx reveal, well, he did 10 years for recording Snow Falling on Cedars. And he's like, so you do know the movie. That shit was funny. I feel like that was a lot of ad-libbing. But anyways, I feel like Ted Lasso also has a lot of ad-libbing too. Because Jason Sudeikis, I mean, he did a lot of stuff with Second City, and then he did a lot of improv stuff, and then, of course, SNL. Everybody plays the shit out of their roles. I fuck with it. I highly recommend it. And, yes. So, that's pretty much been it for me. I've been, of course, listening to the Aaliyah album. Oh, yeah, the most recent Salt album I really fuck with. Yeah. And then it's cool because it sounds like, because I've heard that they don't do interviews. So it sounds like the skits, like some of the in-betweens in their tracks on the new album, they're doing like little interview segments on their own. So I fuck with that. But yeah. Yeah, man. And of course, always listening to Memphis shit. So I am going on vacation. I'm going to Myrtle Beach, and it's going to be my first time going there, and I'm really looking forward to it. So yeah, it's going to be soon. It's probably going to be in the next couple of weeks, but yes. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's going to be soon. I already got a plan with my family, so I'm really, really excited about that. It's just good to go to the beach, water sounds, little beaches, and I haven't been to the beach in a minute. I guess, like, last time I was in South Carolina, when I went to Charleston, yeah, that was the last time I was on the beach. Yep, 3 years ago. No, that was 5 years ago. All right. Well, we bound to go back, baby. And I am excited. So next time you hear me, I'm going to sound all refreshed and shit. I'm going to have cornrows with beads. And it's going to be great. All right, y'all. It's been fun. I'll holler at you later. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.